This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Morning, Bruce. How are you, buddy?
PCA. PCA.
How about that?
PCA. How? I mean, that was...
Yeah.
That was really something when you watched those games in Japan. And yesterday, those chants going up there during that game, it was really impressive.
Is he the biggest star in the Cubs?
He might be. He just might be. I mean, they're, you know, Tucker is expected to be the best player.
Well, yeah, but that's a different question, isn't it? I think Kyle Tucker, obviously the most accomplished and best player. The biggest star might be PCA.
Star, you know, you have to hesitate when you say star because you have to be that player. Is he the most popular? Maybe that's the question.
That's a good question.
I think he is the most popular Cub.
Well, it is St. Patrick's Day, and a very happy St. Patrick's Day to all of our listeners and to you, Bruce. As long as it's St. Patrick's Day, let's just cut to the chase. What the hell's going on with Sean Burke? How did he win that job?
Just pitching as well as he has, having a power arm, being the best choice of the group there. Look, here's your group. It's Cannon, it's Martin, it's Perez, it's Burke. And then Smith, the Rule 5 kid, who's probably going to be the fifth starter. When you look at that rotation, we had Paul Janish on Inside the Clubhouse on Saturday, along with Ryan McGuffey, and we talked to him about depth, and he really couldn't give us a lot of names after those starting five. I mean, you know, you have Schultz and Smith coming, probably, hopefully, at the end of this year, but not for sure. Two big power arm lefties, you know, coming along in the Sox organization. But that's the thing you're most concerned with the White Sox, is the idea that after those guys, whether it's a failure or it's injury, who do you go to? And I think the White Sox will be very busy with the waiver wires here toward the end here of next week when all these rosters have to be set.
Along those lines, Bruce, I couldn't help but notice that Chase Mydroth, who could be the opening day shortstop, played the prospects game at third base. And then he also has played at second base. But if you look at third base, Miguel Vargas has had a pretty good spring at the plate. He needed to. So where's Chase Mydroth starting in this White Sox infield if he indeed is starting?
So it's always defense first at that position, right? And Mydroth has shown that he can play the position. albeit the fact that he's only played 91 games professionally at shortstop. He's played a lot at second, at third, as you mentioned. They feel he can handle the position at shortstop. And, you know, of course, who started that spring outbreak game for the White Sox was Montgomery, who they hope comes along quickly in the minor leagues and eventually takes that job maybe by May 1st.
Hmm. Yeah, the fact that he's starting in the minor leagues, though, speaks to the fact that he was got the back spasm. He just didn't have enough time to convince you that he could be the starting shortstop. So he'll have to earn it, right? He'll have to play well to get up.
There's no question about it, and that is what the position is. The startling thing is about the White Sox, there's so many positions that you can earn, right, on the job. Mm. Right now in spring training, there's still positions open for people to play well. And it's, again, don't ignore the waiver wire when the White Sox are trying to come up with players, good players that don't fit on other teams moving toward the 27th and the home opener at the rate.
Speaking of the waiver wire, Joey Gallo was released. Then we find out that Joey Gallo, outfielder slash first baseman, is going to be Joey Gallo, pitcher. He was a high school pitcher, I believe. Bruce, this is a very unorthodox move. I know it doesn't affect the White Sox, but it was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, he's always had a great arm, okay? So can he become a pitcher? You know, you never doubt people. There's not too many, you know, people out there that have done this. You know, you look at Ohtani, and then it's a great drop-off of pitchers. You know, the Cubs had Brooks Kieschnick back, you know, 25 or 30 years ago, that was an outfielder and a pitcher and was accomplished in the minor leagues that way. I mean, in college ball before they did that experiment with him. And he pitched a little bit in the big leagues with the Brewers. So it can be done, but, you know, it's not something you're going to do overnight.
Yeah, I'm worried about the White Sox, to be honest with you, buddy. I'm worried that they, because they don't have starting pitching, generally speaking. I know it's on the way, but because they don't have it, I'm worried they could be worse than they were a year ago.
Yeah, that's quite a statement. And you know, many people are talking about what is worse. Well, I think, record aside, what's worse is if you're not developing players and showing young players in the organization that are coming along. Will Schultz and Smith step up in the minor leagues? Will CHSN do an awful lot of work sending reporters like Brooke Fletcher to the minor leagues and doing an awful lot of, you know, who's coming next? Because realistically, that's where the future is for the Chicago White Sox. By the way,
Brooks Baldwin, Fletcher, right? Brooks Baldwin?
No, Brooke Fletcher.
Okay.
Look at
Brooke,
you.
Who might be the rookie of the year for the White Sox. She was outstanding yesterday on that broadcast, doing the color commentary with Connor McKnight on that game.
She was great.
She's terrific.
She's
terrific.
Yeah, I thought you were going in the infield and staying there. What about the Sox? What about the Sox plan in left field? What is their plan without Benintendi? When is he coming back? Any more word there?
You know, I think it's Michael Tauchman. You know, we know he can play long periods of time. He was probably the Cubs' most consistent hitter as they were going through their funk last year in May and June and basically losing the division and chance to go to the playoffs by not being able to hit, not being able to close out games. Tauchman is a pro. I talked to him probably a week ago in spring training, and he's prepared to do anything. He feels that he can play 130, 140 games easily. So that would be the start of it, and then you hope, you know, that as time goes on, you know, guys like Fletcher, as you said, and people like that start to develop in the outfield. But, you know, for right now, until Benintendi gets back there, he's probably the best pick.
You know, I got to tell you, Bruce, I'm delighted that the Cubs are getting the PCA chance in the Tokyo Dome, and I'm delighted that that we've learned a word of Japanese for bonding, because that's what they're doing on this trip. I also, in the back of my mind, I understand that it's Ohtani's world and they're just a piece in it. And there is this sense, whether it's accurate or not, that this is so sort of, they're going into the old homecoming game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, I mean, these games count. So I want the Cubs to do well. I want our audience tomorrow when we all get together to talk about it, to be happy and watch the game together, and we're all having a good laugh. I just worry that they're not going to be able to just put Ohtani on base, which is what they should do. Don't even pitch to the guy because he just wants to put a show on. Do you think Major League Baseball has told him you can't do that, or is Craig Counsell going to win?
I think, you know, what you say is like what you normally would say, well, that's never happening. But in the case of Ohtani, it's as the game progresses, it's not a bad idea. You know, you want to pitch around the best player in the game. I mean, he is by far, you know, Aaron Judge is close, but, you know, Ohtani by far is the best hitter in the game. And he impacts the game from the very beginning. That's why he leads off. I don't think it's bad strategy. You know, we saw years and years where managers, you know, when they saw that someone was hot or could impact the game, they would walk him. You know, they'd walk him four times. I remember when Lou Piniella did it with Andre Dawson back in the day, you know, where he was on a hot streak. He said, I'm walking him four times no matter what the situation is, how many people are on base. So that's part of a strategy to win a ball game is to pitch around the best hitter in the game. I don't think the Cubs will hesitate to do that.
Should we expect the lineup that we saw yesterday to be the opening day lineup tomorrow, where Matt Shaw played third base, Gage Workman was at second, and that did Matt Shaw essentially not only get on the plane but earn a job by having a pretty good Sunday at the Tokyo Dome?
Yeah, I think people are going to really like the demeanor of Matt Shaw. I mean, he doesn't shake. He doesn't get nervous. He's not overwhelmed. When he was told he made the team, you know, he didn't put a lampshade on his head and dance around. This is a really centered kid who believes in himself. Unorthodox in a lot of ways, that he throws, that he hits, that he sets up. If you watch his footwork and you watch that left foot tucked inside before he swings. But this is a kid who really believes in himself. So I think he's, you know, obviously your opening day third baseman. I wouldn't hesitate to have Workman batting in the lineup playing second base. The kid has really shown well in the spring here. And, you know, he's been their best bat. So if you're going by who's hot in spring training, Workman's in that lineup as well. But again, it's opening day. As you said, it's a little different dynamic for a manager and a team, but why not?
I think Matthew Boyd pitched well enough yesterday to make you feel better about him going into the season, Bruce. I just wonder, now that he pitched on Sunday, does that mean he's not available for either of the two games against the Dodgers?
No, I would say that's probably right. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I mean, you're not bringing him in to throw his side session. No, he and Tyone probably will not be ready, but, you know, 2 days after a guy starts, they throw a side session. So if they're needed, you know, okay, we don't know what the roster is yet. So they're going to have to set the roster tomorrow. We don't know exactly who the 26 are going to be. I imagine Tyone and Boyd will not, you know, be available for them. So, but again, you know, it's Craig Counsell, so anything can happen here.
I'm curious, are you more interested in how the Birmingham Barons pitching staff performs than the White Sox pitching staff? Because they not only are going to have the two power lefties, they're going to have the Grant, what's his name, the guy from LSU down there.
Grant Taylor.
Right.
He will be also part of that rotation. That's a powerful group of dudes.
Well, it was the game lost laughing? Interest.
Such a powerful group of dudes. Sounds like either a pitching staff or a motorcycle gang.
That's a commercial for them down the line. I mean, the spring outbreak game yesterday was interesting for me until Schultz and Smith came out of the game, right?
Right.
So they were. I mean, look, power arms. You know, look at Smith initially starting out. And I thought I was watching Carlos Rodon, a young Carlos Rodon. The same type of movement, the same Short arm move at the end, same power arm, kind of falling off the mound the same way. So there's a lot to hope for with these two young guys. And I thought, Chuck Garfine did a nice interview with both of them during the game as they came out together. And that's something to look forward to. So, yes, Birmingham is something that you'll be looking at. You'll be looking at these two young guys, and people will be saying, when will they be coming up? I think they both need a full year in the minor leagues.
So where are we with Kyle Tucker in terms of worrying about whether or not he's going to start fast and continue to be the player he has been when he was with the Astros? And does it factor into a Cub fan's thinking if Kyle Tucker struggles to realize that Cam Smith is raking for the Astros in spring training for them?
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
I'm just asking.
Cam Smith is probably going to make that team and be the starting right fielder for the Astros. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, he's a great-looking young player, but I wouldn't worry about Tucker. I've watched a lot of his springs during the time I've been down in spring training, and he's just a little bit behind. But the inside-out swing and the power is there to left center field. To hit home runs at Wrigley Field in April and May, you have to have that swing, a line drive swing, which he has. So I'm not going to worry about him right now. Are they concerned that he's not comfortable right now? Maybe. He doesn't seem greatly comfortable at the plate. But talking to him, he's not worried about it. They're not worried about it. We don't worry about spring training numbers. We just worry about guys getting healthy and ready to play.
I know you're obsessed with former Chicago players in other places. I read that that your guy Yoan Moncada suffered a thumb injury, and it looks like opening day is in question.
Why
for him.
Is he my guy now?
Oh, I just assigned people.
He was your
to
guy
people.
For 7 years, wasn't he?
Now he's your guy, and he can't play, so they're going to move the second baseman to third, and Tim Anderson will start at second base. That's at least the latest report from your Angels.
Yeah, the Angels have a chance to challenge the White Sox for the worst record in the American League. They do. That's a team that's going a strange direction. If you look at payroll, the Angels, I think, are seventh in Major League Baseball, and they're hoping that their right fielder, a guy named Trout, is able to stay healthy for the first time in, 4 years? So that's a mess there. But I'm happy for Tim Anderson to resurrect his career. I have nothing against Moncada. The body language was always horrible, watching mm-hmm. him. The talent was obviously always there. The desire was always questioned. I think White Sox fans really had a hard time understanding why Moncada didn't look more interested in playing every day.
Bruce, the Cubs, as we talked about on Friday, had some interest and maybe still do in Lance Lynn, talking to him about possibilities. But we learned over the weekend that, according to Ken Rosenthal, Kyle Gibson also on the Cubs' radar in case injuries come up. So you've got two veterans that they're talking to in Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson about a spot that may or may not exist in the pitching staff. What do you think about that development?
Yeah, I don't see the need, to be honest with you. They have a bunch of veterans pitching already in the rotation, and you have guys like Brown and Wicks and Assad going to be your AAA starting 1-2-3. I think they have enough depth. I'm more concerned about the progress of Brown and Wicks and being ready to go.
Wait a second.
When they're going to be needed.
Wait a second. So I heard you say this on Saturday too, and inside the clubhouse. Why is everyone in such a hurry to get Ben Brown in the starting rotation at Iowa? Doesn't he have a better, more useful role in the bullpen for the Cubs?
Well, you've seen the arm, haven't you?
Yes.
What does he do that the other starting pitchers that the Cubs have doesn't do?
Velocity?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he's got velocity.
That's my question. Why is he in Iowa if he can help you in Chicago?
Well, I don't know that they aren't going to do what you're saying, David, that they put him at the back end of the bullpen and have more power arms there, to begin the season. But you got a special arm there that you can stretch out and be maybe a starting pitcher for you for the next 5 or 6 years. I think it's incumbent upon you to continue that track and get the very best out of him. I know your need is, you know, you want to have a great bullpen, but I don't want to change the track of his career right now. I'd rather see where he can go and how long he can go out there and pitch 6 or 7 innings. Remember that game before he got hurt last June in Milwaukee where he threw 7 shutout innings and 1 hitter? I mean, those things stand out in the mind of not only fans and media people, but front office people like Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins. So I think they have a starting rotation in mind and depth and the minor leagues for the first time in a long time that they can go to.
Starting pitcher greater than bullpen guy.
I think so.
I think you're right.
That's what you're saying.
I do think so.
You can make the argument, though, that, you know, the beginning of the year, people don't go that long. And, you know, you're going to have, you know, power arms at the back. And he might be very effective there. So I can't tell you for sure they're not going to do that. I can tell you that they think Ben Brown's going to be a starting pitcher.
Great stuff, Bruce. Always fun to talk it
guys,
over.
Guys, can't Appreciate wait for opening day tomorrow and Manny's and the whole schmeal.
Oh, yes. That'd be great. Thanks, Bruce. Good.
Thank you, buddy.
Take care.
Looking forward to
that
it.
That is our guy, Bruce Levine.
Yes, and definitely he is on the right track with that. We're looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, we are definitely looking forward to it. All right, we're going to bring in Mike DeCourcy. We'll find out who his final four is, and is he sticking with it, Mr. David style. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike DeCourcy talking college hoops with Mully and Haw. Sporty News college hoops columnist. Big Ten Network studio analyst. He's a Liverpool supporter, but we let him on anyways. Mike DeCourcy with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Time now to go out to our Aturo Tire hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Aturo.com, where we find man at the middle of everything on Selection Sunday from the Big Ten Network. and the sporting news, Mike DeCourcy. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hi, David. How are you?
Doing well. Excited about the tournament. Looking forward to seeing if the SEC Invitational lives up to all the hype. 14 teams from that league. What was your overall takeaway, Mike, in terms of the job the selection committee did in setting the field and letting North Carolina in?
When you make an error that, like, it's like you see a shortstop who makes every crazy play and hits three home runs in a game, and you're in extra innings, and then he lets a routine one go through his legs. What do you remember?
You remember that?
And that's probably flattering as a comparison to what happened with North Carolina. It was shameful. There is no justification for Carolina's inclusion in this field. And the people in that room know this. They know that Carolina did not have a tournament season. 1-12 against quadrant one opponents does not lie. What it says is, yeah, the games were really tough. No doubt. They played a lot of tough games. But they won one of them. I mean, they couldn't even luck into it. And they couldn't even luck into a second one. And let's not forget that the one they did win, they had to make a massive comeback. And UCLA had to make multiple endgame errors and miss multiple potentially clinching free throws in order for Carolina to win the one. And what if they had lost that one? Would they still have put them in? They look at the fact that Carolina got a lot of wins in the ACC. They, in their entire season, beat one team that was ranked inside the top 40 of the NCAA's own net rankings. One team. They beat one team that's in the field in the at-large portion of the field, the portion where you don't get the automatic bid. I think they beat one automatic qualifier. That's a 15 seed or something like that. There is no justification for including them. Is there a justification for including them over Boise? Sure, but
yes.
Boise didn't make it.
Right.
But there's no justification for including them over West Virginia in particular and Indiana beyond that.
Could not agree more. And that was well put in the way you succinctly put that, Mike. I think that everybody saw the same thing and understands what you're talking about. I wonder this. Every year you give us a good number of teams that you feel like are good enough to win it all and to cut down the nets. When you look at this bracket, the way things are arranged, how long is that list this year?
Well, if it's the traditional qualifications, if it's you have to fit what has worked for somewhere between 3 and 4 decades, it's like Duke, Florida, maybe Michigan State, and that's where the list ends. And if it's, okay, well, since there's so few of them, then it's got to be more open. And then maybe it extends to 7 or 8, maybe. It's really not a impressive field in that sense. We have more good pros prospects in college basketball than we had a year ago, but we don't have a lot of good teams that were formed out of those good pro prospects. I mean, you look right there at down the highway at Illinois, which has two first round prospects that are freshmen. And they have a nice team, but it's been a very inconsistent team. It's been a team that that has frustrated a lot of analysts because of their dependence on three-point shooting as a team that doesn't shoot three-pointers very well, and a team that has made some mental errors in games they could have won, like the Tennessee home game, most egregiously. And so there's a lot of that. There are other teams that that have, you know, a couple of those guys, but have significant deficiencies. BYU with Igor Demon, and it's a very good team, but defensively they're not very good. And so, can you win with like the 60th best defense in the country? It's not happened, so it's unlikely to happen. A lot of the better pro prospects are down in the double-digit seed range. Arkansas has won, Oklahoma. Teams like that are all toward the back of the field. So it's really an interesting tournament in that way, and maybe a lot of molds will be broken this year because of the absence of influential pro prospect at the highest levels of the tournament.
You're headed down to Raleigh. You're going to see Duke, which I think has its best team since John Shire took over, at least the best team that he has coached. A lot of the speculation about Cooper Flagg's injury, how well will he play if he does come back? And I just wonder, from your perspective, you know, injuries can be hard to project, but how does that affect Duke's chances in terms of this, in this tournament, of winning it all? And is this a significant enough to give you doubt?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I said in my article today that it would be nice to have access to Cooper's MRI results as well as the medical training to decipher them. Without that, I just have to guess based on the fact that he had a shoe on to that ankle before the end of the game. And if you looked around, you could see multiple players who may be available for this tournament who were on the bench in boots, just to be sure. Duke didn't even go that far. I mean, Juwan Roberts from Houston watched the Big 12 title game in a boot. I think all indications are he will play this week. But just to be sure, they were really cautious and had him in a boot. It happened with Tyrese Hunter of Memphis as well, whose circumstance I'm not quite as sure of. Who also watched in a boot, whereas Cooper had a regular sneaker on his ankle before the end of the game in which he was injured. So I kind of think he's probably going to be fine. I would say that they should be just fine handling their 16 seed with some contribution for him. But I will say this, like if you think he's sitting out this weekend and then coming back next weekend and then they're going to take it off from there, that's not going to work. That I will tell you right now. I've seen that movie before. It doesn't work. This tournament is too hard for you to make those kinds of adjustments midway through and expect it to work. So he needs to play some this weekend. He may not need to play a ton. I mean, they beat Carolina, and they had Carolina buried. They let him back in. I give credit to Carolina for at least that they got back in the game against Duke on Saturday, but they had them buried, on Friday. They had them buried and let them back in. I think they should be able to handle even Mississippi State, which is a very fine team, or Baylor on Sunday of this week in the second round game with some contribution from Cooper. They just can't afford it to be none.
Mike, we know you made your Final Four picks. You've made all your picks. Was it a difficulty? Was it easy? Do you feel like there's a lot of leeway, or do you feel like you got it pretty tight?
I feel good about my Final Four, although it's hard to say for certain, obviously. I feel good about the Final Four. A lot of the picks are hard because, as I mentioned, there's so many deficiencies in so many of the teams. It's been a very competitive year. I think the adjustment to the conferences, the greater spread among a lot of the conferences has influenced the way this regular season has played out. I think the other aspect of it is that that element of it's a more talented year than a year ago, but still not what we have seen in many years. And so that makes me wonder about, who do you rely upon? Because usually you look and you say, those guys are not letting that team lose. Well, those guys don't play in college basketball anymore, or at least not in, or maybe American basketball is declining to the point where you just don't see the kind of talent you once did. I think we're in a real rut in terms of young American talent in the sport. It's frustrating, and that's one of the reasons why Cooper Flagg stands out so much, because he would be a great prospect in any of the previous decades, and that's part of the reason why I felt fairly confident in selecting Duke to win it.
So, Mike, away from the tournament, Northwestern did not get in, but I'm curious what your perspective is on the future of Chris Collins. His name will come up and has already in speculation for the Indiana job. A lot of other big names are up for a job that used to be a big one and still could be potentially. Do you see that being a possibility? Is that something that you think Northwestern has to worry about?
Well, I also have heard a little bit about him regarding Villanova. I mean, he's got some ties to Villanova. spent some time there when he was younger. Excuse me, to Philadelphia, not to Villanova.
Right.
To that area. So that, you know, that's something that could happen. I don't know what will happen with Chris. I know he's very happy at Northwestern. I know he likes the area. I know he's enjoyed coaching there. I'm sure that he has had opportunities to leave to go elsewhere and has declined. These are two pretty good opportunities, though. These are places where national championships have been won. And it's interesting to me the perspective on that. I did have Chris mentioned fairly prominently when I did my initial coaching list article on Indiana the day that it became obvious that Mike Woodson would not return. He was very prominent in my list. And I got a lot of pushback from Indiana fans who don't seem to understand what an achievement that doing what he's done at Northwestern is, and don't understand that, like, it's not about whether you've been in the Final Four or the Elite Eight or whatever. My favorite descriptor of this is I always say, not everybody plays the same course. Some guys are playing a pitch and putt, and some guys are playing Pine Valley. And he walked into a place that had never been to the NCAA tournament from 1939 to 2016. And he got him in three times in the next 6 or 7 years. He's a phenomenal coach, a great guy, one of my favorite people in coaching. If whoever ends up with him, Northwestern, Indiana, Villanova, or whatever, is a blessed place in terms of basketball, because he is phenomenal.
And you mentioned you have Duke winning the tournament. You've got Duke beating Florida, and you got Michigan State and Tennessee as your other Final Four teams, right?
Correct. Yes. Really struggled with the Houston-Tennessee pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think honestly, when you're doing these things, you get down to it. And if I had gone with Houston, I think that was the last region I completed. If I'd gone with Houston, I would have had three number one seeds. And I'm like, nah, that's not going to happen. So that would played into it. Rick Barnes's inevitability played into it a little bit. They have, I think, a little bit more offensive talent at Tennessee than they do at Houston. It's close. Neither one's overwhelming. Although their metrics on the offensive end are both fine, you can watch it and see. Sometimes they get into, unlike some other teams in the country, they get into ruts where offense becomes difficult. Among the better teams, I mean, they get into those ruts where you think, how does this team ever score a basket? And then you see them at the other end and you think, how is anybody ever going to score a basket against these guys?
I went for the throwback sentimental journey to San Antonio, Mike. I had Pitino and Izzo matching up in the Final Four. That may not happen, but what a remarkable feat for Pitino. Six teams now to the NCAAs.
Yeah, and he's got a chance, and it's interesting. He's got a chance to be the only one. If you're correct, he'll be the only one ever to take four different schools to the Final Four. And it's kind of fascinating that it would take a minor upset. But if Arkansas beats Kansas, then Calipari could deny Pitino the chance to do that, or Pitino could deny Calipari the chance to do that, because each has taken three different teams. They're the only ones that have ever gone to the Final Four at three different schools.
Great stuff.
I told David, I felt like Florida was playing better than everyone for a while. And I like their guards, and I know you got them in the championship game, but they're so popular a pick now, it's kind of turned me off.
Yeah, I get it. The thing I like about them is that they are a complete team. And I want to see an NBA guy out there. I mean, it's been...
Yeah.
My first Final Four I attended was 1987. I didn't cover that. I was in the stands way up toward the top of the Superdome as a fan, as a spectator. And that year, Steve Alford led Indiana to the national championship. That's the last time that the champion did not have a first-round pick in their rotation. And I'm telling you, look around the top 8 to 10 seeds in this deal, 12 seeds, and you will not find very many guys that are projected to be first-round picks. And that worries me about Auburn. Does maybe somebody take Jahni Broome? I don't know. I like Jahni Broome. I think he's terrific. But it's just that I feel like I don't like to joust with history. History says this is what wins. And Auburn doesn't fit that. as good as they are. Houston doesn't fit that, as good as they are. It does fit Florida. It does fit Duke, and it pretty much fits Michigan State, although their offense has to get going a little bit in terms of efficiency. I think that's ground they could cover over the next few weeks. Those teams are the ones that have what I'm talking about. That NBA guy has been the separator, and you can see it when you get to that level. I'm sitting next to Bruce Weber on the set of BTN on Saturday, and we talked about pros and how important they are. And I mentioned that Michigan has one, and also Maryland has Derek Queen, and then Michigan State with Chase Richardson. And he followed up what I said by pointing out that when the Illini were in the 2005 title game, he has a photograph of the tip-off, and every one of the 10 players on that court at that moment played in the NBA.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mike DeCourcy.
Heading down to North Carolina, Raleigh to observe Duke in the first round of the Eastern East Regional, and that'll be fun to have him follow that along the way. Looking forward to talking to him next time.
312-644-6767, Mully and Haw on the score.
Yeah, it obviously feels like you hear stuff about Coach Johnson, who I haven't got to know super well yet, but all my experiences so far have been amazing, and his reputation speaks for himself. And then just, yeah, guys in the locker room that I'm really excited to meet and have excellent resumes and seem like great guys. And I think it'll be a great opportunity for me to learn from them and improve and hopefully contribute as well.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. So the Bears continue to build, and Ben Johnson in the middle of it, and always fun to hear from.
That was Drew Dolman, yeah. On Friday, talking to the afternoon show, new center for the Bears. NFL never sleeps, so obviously with Selection Sunday, the Bengals selected that day to overnight make official, or I guess come to the agreement. They're going to give all the money to their offensive side of the ball. T. Higgins and Jamar Chase now are going to be extended. They have their new deals, and Joe Burrow is going to be obviously well paid, handsomely paid, and they're going to have to find a way, according to Diana Rossini from The Athletic, they're still trying to find a way to pay Trey Hendrickson. They better find a way to pay Trey Hendrickson, because they're going to be playing a lot of games. They're going to play catch up. This is a shootout city, because they don't have a defense right now to speak of, but they do have all the highly paid offensive weaponry.
It's interesting that they have chosen this route. It's interesting that the players wanted to both contracts announced at the same time. They want all of their offensive. They want to appear to be paid similarly and paid together, etc.
Yeah, Jamar Chase gets 4 years, $161 million, 112 guaranteed.
Yep.
That's the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history.
That's right.
T. Higgins 4 years, 115.
2 years guaranteed.
Yeah, and that's the highest paid second wide receiver in NFL history. So they are making history and breaking news in Cincinnati. And then how they stop anybody is anybody's guess. Good luck, Al Golden. Isn't he the new defensive coordinator, the former Notre Dame defensive coordinator? So that's a heck of a way to put together a roster, but who knows? Maybe it'll work. Meanwhile,
maybe it'll work.
The Texans sign Derek Stingley, according to Adam Schefter, to a 3-year, $90 million. 89 of the $90 million guaranteed. That $1 million they're going to quibble about. But that $89 million is guaranteed over 3 years. $30 million base. He's now the highest paid defensive back in NFL history, resetting the cornerback market. And the Bears are saying, wow, wow. We're glad we got in front of that with the Jalen Johnson deal. Because he got now his $54 million guaranteed seemed like a pittance compared to that.
He's got 3 years left on that deal,
Jalen Johnson.
Right? Yes,
I believe so.
A 4 year deal.
When
it's
he's
pretty good,
it's a pretty good bargain.
Yeah,
well, it's not a bargain. It's a very expensive deal. But when he signed it was a 4 year extension last year, $76 million in total, $54.5 million guaranteed. So there's 3 years left on him.
It's pretty good.
In terms of the under contract, which fits into the Bears' timeline. Everything with the Bears' timeline is built around the idea that they're going to win within the next 3 years. That's the window that's open.
Yeah. Will they? It does look, again, it's very
difficult. Why we're here to discuss it.
Difficult to measure what they're going to do in the draft and how that's going to impact this season.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they've done some really good work. They got a lot they still need to get done.
Yeah.
But I think with the remnants of free agency, dare I call it that, there will still be some leftover money and some things they can do if indeed they choose to get it done. And then obviously you've got a lot of draft picks and a lot of pretty high draft picks, four in the first 72 picks that should help you do a pretty good job of getting this team ready to go.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Rory McIlroy just won the Players' Championship in a three-hole playoff.
Win? Yes. That was so inevitable.
How about that?
On this day?
Of course he did.
Get out of here.
Nah, I'm not going anywhere.
I wouldn't have bent a punt on it.
That's a lot. Raise a Guinness that to Rory McIlroy.
That's right.
So he wins today.
My goodness.
All right, we got Coom next hour.
Couldn't get it done yesterday.
Coom Dog is here. He's going to be here at 9:25.
Yes. Can't wait. I'm very excited to talk to Ron.
We've got
the beginning of the season tomorrow, and we'll break it all down. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.